Hey there, Almost. This is Louisa, and I have the pleasure of interviewing activist and scholar Jana Silverman. Jana holds a PhD in labor and development economics from the State University of Campinas in Brazil, and is currently a postdoctoral scholar at the Center for Global Workers' Rights at Penn State. She's been active in the Fora Bolsonaro protests against Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, and she's also an executive committee member of the U.S. Network for Democracy in Brazil. So, Jana, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So to kind of set the stage for our conversation about what's happened in Brazil the last couple of years, it would be appropriate to kind of remind listeners about what happened the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff, or Dilma, and the relationship between that impeachment and the Lava Jato, or Operation Car Wash, which was an anti-corruption scandal that used lawfare to prevent PT, the Workers' Party of Brazil, from winning the 2008 election. And also, it's what led up to the lawfare that ultimately impeached Dilma. So could you briefly tell us what happened during this time?
Yeah, so just to kind of set the stage, not to go back too far, but again, the sort of elites, Brazil is currently and has always been, for all of its history, one of the most unequal societies in the world. You have this very white elite, which is, you know, less than 10% of the population. It's a country that had the largest, migration of enslaved people from Africa. Over 4 million people were brought to Brazil during the time of slavery. And so that's, you know, sort of these very ingrained economic, social, and racial inequalities very much mark sort of the country's political history and economic history. And so in that sense, the elites, every time that you've had sort of these populist or left-wing politicians that come to power and start challenging their hegemony, they use usually corruption scandals as a way to kind of change the terms of the political debate and remove these left-wing politicians from power. This happened with Getúlio Vargas back in the 1950s. This happened when the original military coup in 1964 against the President Jango, and this happened again in 2014 against 2014 to 2016 with Dilma Rousseff from the Workers' Party. So this Lava Jato scandal was linked to these cases of corruption in the state oil company, Petrobras, which is the most important national company in Brazil. Again, there was actual corruption detected among sort of mid-level to higher level executives of the company. Again, some were appointed by the PT, some were not, but there was this sort of incredible, there was this judge called Sergio Moro, who basically totally abused his powers and tried to extrapolate this corruption that did happen within the oil company, kickbacks and so on for contracts, and tried to extend that to make it seem that Lula, former President Lula, and that at the time President Dilma were directly involved in those corruption scandals. Dilma, ironically, was the president who most did, could pass the most laws to empower the judiciary to conduct independent investigations. She passed a law that allowed Brazilian prosecutors to use plea bargain testimony for the first time. And it was something that totally got used against her and the Workers' Party afterwards, because that all the testimony that was taken from these corruption scandals, by building contractors and others that were implicated, this judge, Sergio Moro, selectively applied only against PT politicians, including Dilma Lula. Anyway, long story short, there's all these horrible accusations. Sergio Moro goes to the point of actually wiretapping the telephone of ex-President Lula when he was talking to Dilma, and releasing and then handing over that material of the tapped phone calls to major news networks, like the equivalent of like having illegal wiretapped information being broadcast on ABC or CBS News. And this is like a year and a half after Dilma is reelected. You know, there's the right-wing party start questioning the re-election, saying there was electoral fraud. Of course, there was not. Brazil has one of the most, solid electoral systems in the world in terms of, electronic balloting, et cetera. And so it becomes this whole sort of scandal, absolutely fabricated by this judge, Sergio Moro, who runs the Lava Jato, and then together with the mass media, all obviously in conjunction with these political and economic elites that realize that became, absolutely, they were absolutely just trying to find any way of getting the PT out of power, because this is a workers' party that was elected and reelected four times, And so when they realized that they couldn't win in the ballot box, they went through this, they used what we call lawfare to, take another route to get Dilma out of office. And so that's kind of the short version of what happened, a really horrible tragedy.
Okay, so I'd be remiss not to ask, what was the role of the United States in all this?
So, of course, at the time, none of this was, self-evident, but we have now there's actual evidence showing that Sergio Moro, there was a lot of collusion between Sergio Moro and the department, the U.S. Department of Justice. He made repeated trips to the United States. There was, again, this was, remember, we're talking about 2014, 2013, 2015. This is around the time when, Edward Snowden was had uncovered all the information about the NSA, wiretapping world leaders, including Dilma Rousseff. So there was, again, the extent of that conclusion, we do not know, but there definitely seems to be evidence that this whole sort of strategy of using plea bargain testimony for, concocting these sort of trumped up corruption cases is something that there was a definite collusion between the Department of Justice, Sergio Moro, and possibly other US-based entities as well.
Okay, and so the targeting of PT members kind of created this vacuum, right? I mean, Lula was in jail, right? And so that led to the rise of Bolsonaro, Jair Bolsonaro, which, I'm sure most people have heard about. And so I guess I think the question on lots of people's minds is that there's often the comparison made between Trump and Bolsonaro. And I'm wondering if you could explain kind of what are the similarities and what are the differences?
Yeah, so basically what happened in Brazil is that you have the sort of traditional right wing, a neoliberal right wing, but wouldn't say far right is the ones that sort of orchestrated this whole impeachment process with the collusion, of Sergio Moro and these, legal operators back in from the period of 2014 on. But part of the process of getting popular support for the impeachment, what we call the coup, the constitutional coup against Dilma, was through organizing massive street protests, obviously manipulating, saying it's against corruption, even though all these corruption cases were totally unfounded. They created or gave political space to these far right groups that started mobilizing and organizing these street protests from about 2015 on. And so basically what happened, Dilma gets impeached. She's removed from office in August 2016. Then you have Lava Jato car wash investigations continue. And Lula, again, then the sort of accusations start focusing on Lula himself. There was 24 accusations against Lula in several different federal courts and regional courts. And so he goes to prison because he gets judged guilty on one of those cases back in April 2018. And so this is, again, this is the presidential election in Brazil was going to be October 2018, because from 2016 to 2018, you had this interim government of right-wing Michel Temer, who was in power, also kind of implementing all the neoliberal reforms that the elites wanted that the PT refused to do. Out of nowhere, once Lula goes to prison, you start seeing as sort of this figure, always very marginalized before, Jair Bolsonaro. He's, again, he kind of with this discourse that he's, you know, he's anti-systemic, you know, he's a populist, he represents, you know, real working class people who are, you know, like outside of the corridors of Brasilia, which is the capital, even though he had been elected. I don't know, he'd been in Congress since, I think, I want to say 1992, elected as a member of Congress. So he was certainly absolutely within, you know, the political system. But again, someone who was always very marginalized, starts gaining more and more attention. In fact, a sort of anecdote in that the House of Representatives in Brazil had to one by one vote for the impeachment or for or against the impeachment of Dilma in this whole crazy ceremony back in April 2016. And Bolsonaro, when he came up to give his little 1 minute speech about why he was voting for the impeachment, he dedicated his vote to the Colonel Brilhante Ustra, who is the worst torturer of, you know, responsible for over 45 deaths and disappearances during the Brazilian military dictatorship. So he, like, then he started getting like all this attention, you know, and he starts leading these street protests, you know. And anyway, he says he declares himself a presidential candidate again, early 2018, but the sort of regular right-wing elites, they're kind of like, oh, you know, this guy's crazy. No one's going to really vote for him in the end. But he used fake news. He used, you know, all these networks that he built up, you know, as well as the support of the evangelical church to basically get elected over the right-wing candidate, you know, and obviously over the PT candidate who, you know, was someone who kind of stepped in at the last minute after Lula was not allowed to run because he was in prison. So that's kind of like, he came in as this outsider, very similar to Trump, even though he was very not an outsider, you know, and very much used fake news and, you know, this propaganda machine that was totally outside of the influence of the sort of normal spheres of mass media to get himself elected. And again, the discourse being very similar, sort of like, we defend the real Brazilian, or like, we defend the real American, you know, the hardworking, you know, middle class white,
the real
man,
Brazil,
you know.
Yeah. The real parts of Brazil. Yeah,
exactly. So that's similar to kind of the Trump discourse, right? You know, they definitely had a different discourse, even though kind of what brought them to power might have been, the circumstances were a little bit different, you know.
So let me ask. So homeboy's out, right? Or Lula was exonerated. I should phrase that differently. He plans to run, right? Yeah, he very much plans to run. So could you tell us what, you know, there's been a lot of discourse recently about the, you know, the resurgence of the peak time. So you have historically red states like Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, whatever, but you also have newly elected pinkish governments in Honduras, Chile, mm-hmm. Peru's kind of having a hard time. What would a Lula presidency represent? Not just for Brazilians, but also for, mm-hmm. for Latin America, briefly, if you can.
Yeah, well, that's a big question. You know, first of all, I would say he's got to get elected first. Like, given, you know, I lived in Brazil the whole period up, you know, in the run up to the 2018 elections. I only moved back to the United States, you know, kind of late 2020. And it was really a horror show. You know, nobody expected that this guy Bolsonaro was going to win. And again, it was all this lawfare that was used against him to, you know, even though there wasn't fraud per se, you know, in terms of electoral fraud, there was sort of mediatic, you know, fraud, I could call it. So I think I wouldn't discount something like that happening again, you know, first of all, although Lula continues to lead, there was a poll that was released today, he's leading by 14 points. So that's pretty substantial against an incumbent. You know, again, there is a lot of, you know, we're talking about over 800,000 people died of coronavirus in Brazil. You know, Bolsonaro is one of the sort of the most infamous, you know, coronavirus deniers, you know, in the world, probably as bad or worse than Trump, I would say, you know, actively work to make sure Brazilians didn't get the vaccine, you know, like, you know, some really, really horrible stuff. So, yeah. Anyway, so I think what could happen with Lula government, he's going to have a lot of rebuilding to do. You know, Bolsonaro has destroyed a lot of, you know, he's destroyed education, especially higher education. He's destroyed, you know, the healthcare, public healthcare system. He's destroyed the environment. You know, you've had massive burning of the Amazon like never before. You know, he's liberating, you know, mining, open pit mining in indigenous areas in the Amazon. I mean, so he's going to have a lot of rebuilding to do. And the problem is, is that in Brazil, you know, you have 32, 33 political parties, you know, who are represented in Congress. He's going to have to very broad coalition to be able to govern. And the question is, who's going to be included in that coalition? So I think it's going to be just as important who gets elected in the Congress as if Lula can actually get elected as president as well, to be able to make real change and to at least reverse the damage that happened under Bolsonaro. And again, I think Latin America, with this whole war in Ukraine, like sort of that's, you know, changing things geopolitically. You know, I think a lot can still happen in the next 6 months before the Brazilian elections in October, before we can see, you know, what a PT victory could mean for sort of, you know, a second pink tide, so to speak.
Yeah, I know. I mean, would you say it would be fair to say that potentially it could be very beneficial for countries that have been under illegal U.S. sanctions, right, to have somebody like Lula in charge of the largest economy in Latin America to finally be able to break free from the, you know, from the boot, from the imperialist boot that they've been under as a result of illegal sanctions?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's worth saying that the PT governments, you know, were always, they absolutely had, you know, Cuba, Venezuela as important, you know, both foreign policy and trading partners. You know, one of the most successful social programs that Dilma implemented in her first government was called Médicos Sin Fronteras, where it was Cuban doctors who came to rural areas of Brazil. It was a beautiful thing, you know, and Bolsonaro kicked them all out, you know. I mean, that was one of the first things he actually did as president, you know, and so you have massive areas, rural areas in the country that have no medical attention, you know, because Brazilian doctors don't want to go work there, you know, so that's why they had, you know, brought in the Cubans, you know. It was a beautiful revolutionary program, you know. I think it would be a very positive thing for Lula to get elected in terms of sort of creating this, you know, it would definitely consolidate a sort of, or return to a more multipolar, you know, sort of geopolitical, you know, situation in the Americas. You know, there would definitely, I think, the possibility of kind of reviving, you know, CELACI and some of these, you know, proposals for Latin American integration, you know, that's going to be, you know, UNASUR, that's going to be all revisited under a Lula presidency, probably. And that's obviously a very positive thing for these countries that have been, you know, illegally and unfairly targeted by US, you know, sanctions.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Jana, for joining us and explaining all this, so wrapping up history in a couple of minutes. It's very much deeply appreciated.
I did my best.